Welcome back. This is Connecting the Drops, a collaboration between Rocky Mountain Community Radio and the Colorado Foundation for Water Education. We're talking about the Colorado River tonight. And Maeve, I believe we had a caller.
We do have a caller. We'll go next to Jed. Jed, you're calling in from Somerset in the North Fork Valley. Welcome to the show. What's your question or comment?
Thanks for taking my call. I guess it's just a general question regarding to what extent stakeholders are projecting decreased snowpack and increased liquid runoff like we're currently seeing, but later into the fall and beginning earlier in the spring, that might require for the management and government of flow, installation of greater reservoir capacity to offset that difference, and given the additional cost of implementing something like that as an approach to mitigating the effects of climate change, where additional financing could be had.
Jed, thank you for your call. Wayne Vandersheer with the Colorado Springs Water Utility, do you maybe have an answer to Jed's question regarding diminishing snowpack and solutions to that?
I think there's a general agreement that we're looking at warmer conditions and projections for diminishing snowpack, but also a higher degree of variability in snowpack and precipitation, and how that kind of combination of those changes result in stream flow and runoff and yield for anyone who's dependent on the Colorado River is still, I think, science that's yet to be fully resolved. So one thing we have seen, though, is generally in the last number of years, a departure from traditional snow pack reliability and variability that we saw, say, back in the 1990s.
This goes back to Taylor's point that we're in the future of water looks very, very different from the history of water. Wayne, maybe you can expand on this. We touched on it earlier around proven cooperative agreements with water use, particularly on the Colorado River. Are we seeing successful collaborations that we can look to as models for the way forward for water management?
We absolutely have to find the collaborative agreements. We have a collaborative agreement with Aurora and the West Slope for our Eagle River water rights that we'll look forward to executing as we go forward in the coming years as well. So those kinds of agreements and the Denver West Slope Cooperative Agreement and other agreements that are sort of out there, sort of in the formulation stages, are absolutely essential. Our agreements with Pueblo here in the Arkansas Valley are also another model for sort of intrabasin cooperative agreements. So I think the era of cooperation and smarter management of all the water resources that we have is absolutely essential.
And Wayne, can those agreements work in tandem with existing water law, or are you looking for ways to work together that's completely separate from what has become a very, very complex system of laws governing water in the state?
I think most of the agreements generally recognize the prior appropriation system as the bedrock of our water system in the state, and so most of them don't, that I'm not aware of, don't go to sort of overturn that law and those traditions, but they do tend to provide more flexibility and creativity of how to operate within those guidelines.
Well, Wayne, I know that you, along with Taylor Halls, you have served on the Planning Commission for the State Water Plan. Taylor, maybe you can just tell our listeners exactly what is the State Water Plan and how does it relate to our conversation today on the Colorado River?
Certainly. The governor, so there has been a process in place for the last 8 to 10 years of stakeholders in the state working on developing solutions, assessing data, what's our shortfall for the future. We expect about 500,000 acre foot shortfall in the state of Colorado, especially focused on the Front Range here, trying to meet municipal needs. And we are now looking for a path forward. And it includes conservation. It includes working with agriculture to maybe bring more water from agriculture, but not in a buy and dry, which is when you just take water off the farms. It's more fallowing agreements. You pay the farmer, interruptible supply agreements. They're looking for a project off of the Colorado River, so they call that new supply. And then we're also looking to have high success rate on existing projects that are already in the works, like the Moffitt project that Jim mentioned. And so we've been in this process for 8 years. The governor in earlier this year signed an executive order to come up with a state water plan. And there's a planning commission type group that's working on this, and they have until and the Water Conservation Board, which is the lead agency for water policy matters in Colorado, they have until end of 2014 to come up with a draft. And that is supposed to give us a framework and a path forward for how we meet our future water needs, but also protecting our rivers and our recreational economy. So we're working on that now. There's also, in addition to the overarching state organizations working on this, each basin has a roundtable, and it's made up of stakeholders from county government and local government and recreation interests and environmental interests and agriculture. And they are all supposed to be working on their own solutions. So if you're in the Gunnison Basin or the Colorado, you're looking for solutions for your basin. But those should roll up to a statewide plan, and that's we've got our work cut out for us.
That's Taylor Holes. She is my guest in the KGNU studios in Boulder. She's the Nature Conservancy's Colorado River Program District. Earlier, we heard from Wayne Vandersheer. He's joining us by phone, and he is the manager for Water and Wastewater Planning, Water Resources Engineering, Conservation, and Forest Service Asset Management for Colorado Springs Utilities. You are listening to Connecting the Drops. Back to you, Eric, at KDNK.
Thank you, Maeve.
Well, Jim Pokrant, I have a question for you since you are involved with the Colorado Basin Roundtable, which is one of nine roundtables throughout the state. What is the biggest challenge that the roundtables are facing?
The biggest challenge, whether it's us or the statewide plan, is to come up with a balanced solution. We're using the metaphor of the four legs of the stool, and that's been referenced with, you know, agriculture, new supply, which is a new Colorado River project, conservation, and reuse. So the two big places there potentially, there's agriculture. That's where 80% of the water in the state is being consumed, being put to work, and agriculture is actually the big target if you ask me. And, of course, we're casting our eyes on the Colorado River, and while some of us aren't so sure that there's water to develop, and about if that should be the first tool out of the box or the last tool out of the box, Colorado believes that should be the last tool out of the box. But meanwhile, agriculture is out there, and it's already on the meat hook, and it's ready to be skinned alive if we don't do something to somehow balance our water supply gap solutions as population is going to grow. Because when we come back to a new supply project, forget about how you feel politically, morally, or environmentally about the Colorado River. If there were all the water in the world in it and you could do a huge project, it's still going to take 20 years or so, maybe 30 years, maybe 15. So what are you going to do in the meantime? And that's where we think you should pull these other tools out of the box and really go for concerted conservation, of which Colorado Springs is rather progressive, and they're a shining example of people doing good things, as is Denver Water and Aurora and others. So there's lots of good examples out there, but the trick is, does it become a very concerted statewide program? But agriculture is a thorny issue because water rights are private property rights, and they can be bought and sold at will, whatever the market will bear. So the real question is, perhaps, does agriculture want to be saved? You know, we want to save it as a state because it's our history, it's our de facto open space, it's food, it's culture, it's economy. But we've seen on the Eastern Plains where there's been by and dry, and local economies have collapsed, and that's a model that we don't want to go to statewide. So, to me, even though I represent the Colorado River District, I think agriculture is actually the first concern because that's where people are going right now.
That was Jim Pokrant, our guest in the KDNK studios, education and communications specialist for the Colorado River Conservation District. I'm also joined by KDNK reporter Amy Haddon Marsh.
You know, Jim Pokrant, you were talking a little bit, you just mentioned when you were talking about agriculture, how local economies can be impacted by the loss of agriculture. Can you go into a little more detail about that?
Sure. If a farmer decides to just sell out, which is his right or her right, it's their, in a sense, their retirement plan, and that's how it works in the free market system, so be it. But if enough of that happens, all of a sudden the John Deere dealer goes out, the fertilizer dealer goes out, and in the local communities, when land goes from agricultural to non-productive, there's an erosion of the tax base, property tax base. So they've seen on the Eastern Plains how there's been an implosion from all those factors, and you know that's where we don't want to go. Now, we also get into discussion of West Slope agriculture versus East Slope agriculture. You know, we don't think West Slope should be sacrificed to save East Slope, but the cruel fact is that agriculture is linked on both sides of the Continental Divide, as are we as people. A lot of producers on the West Slope send their cattle to the Front Range for finishing. So, you know, to the degree that the feed might not be produced, or, you know, the feedlots aren't able to stay in business, that's going to affect the West Slope ag. So it's a really thorny issue. Earlier, there was, I think Taylor mentioned rotational fallowing. You know, that's one way for a producer to actually, you know, turn water into a crop without selling it off completely. And depending on the year, a portion of the water may be leased out and the producer gets income. So that's a win-win. Hopefully that bolsters the municipal supply and it keeps the farmer in business.
Well, what kind of values are reflected by these kinds of water conflicts?
Well, the ultimate conflict or conflicting of values is, do we want to be a state, I suppose, of lawns, of which we have plenty on the West Slope. So it's really lawns versus agriculture in some respects. So it's incumbent upon us as we try and ferret our way through this jigsaw puzzle to look at how we can develop and not build a residential infrastructure that reflects people who maybe moved here from North Carolina, Chicago, where they get 40 inches of rain a year, and that's how they want to landscape. This is still the West. That worked in the 1950s, 1960s, but now that we are looking at greater population growth and we're in the last increment of river development at best, due to legal or hydrologic limits, we got to make some decisions.
Thank you.
That was Jim Pokrant, Education and Communications Specialist for the Colorado River Conservation District. Back to you, Maeve, at KGNU.
Thanks, Eric, and we will go back to the phones. We have Dieter in Carbondale. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for taking my call. The geologic reality is really the guiding factor that we need to follow here, and it just seems that these people that are involved with water management are just not understanding that matter. They always are looking for new water instead of looking at water savings and actually using less water. Now, water is the big problem, but I want to refer to our number one and two business, if you know what I mean, because in Colorado, compost toilets are still illegal. So here we're sending our pee and poop water down to California and Nevada, anyways, into Lake Powell. And we cannot conserve that water because it's illegal to install a compost toilet, which may use absolutely no water.
Well, so, Peter, I'm going to ask you if you can just turn down the radio behind you there. We're kind of getting a little echo. And I will actually like to put some of these questions to Wayne Vandersheer at Colorado Springs. He is one of those guys, as you say, they're managing water. Wayne, are you looking for new water or are you really looking for ways to conserve the water that we have?
We're actually doing both, and let me talk about how we conserve our water. We have, and Jim rightly pointed out, and thank Jim for the compliment on a very aggressive water conservation and education program. Just last year, we had over 5,000 water fixtures, high-efficiency fixtures, rebated, saving 59 million gallons per year of water, and our education program reached out to over 25,000 people, adults, in our K-12 school program as well. And when we flush our toilets, particularly the water under Colorado water law that's fully reusable, we treat that water to the Clean Water Act standards and grab that water back up and reuse it through our exchange program and through our non-potable system to be fully consumed. So it doesn't, of course, in our direction, it doesn't end up in California. It would end up in Kansas if we didn't do that, but we do do it, and we're at about 99% effective reuse of that asset.
Well, Dieter, thank you for your call. We will go next to Valerie. You're calling in from Lafayette. Valerie, welcome to the show. What's your question?
I didn't have a question. I had comments to the last three callers.
Please go ahead.
The man that mentioned Nestle bottling water, and I totally agree with him that all bottled water that is not sustainable or actually steals it from other people, like Fiji water, that every just boycott every product they make. Boycott worked for Cedar Chavez back when. And any, like, swimming pool water, my daughter thought of this 1 year ago. She was in CU and colleagues there. And any pool water, because a lot of people have pools, could go right straight into a holding facility for toilets instead of having to flush toilets with clean water. And we actually have a composting toilet up on the mountain because there's not water up there, and that they work very well. And they could be modified to work even better. And another thing people have to be concerned about is all this water that we keep drinking is becoming more and more dangerous to drink because you can't, a lot of things are 100% soluble in water, like plutonium and a lot of people's meds and stuff. And they keep building up year after year after year and probably contributes to a lot of the health problems and things going on right now.
Well, Valerie, thank you very much for calling in from Lafayette. Taylor Hawes with the Nature Conservancy. I'm going to ask you about maybe do we have to just completely rethink our attitude towards water use? As Valerie said there, I mean, we're used to going to the store buying bottled water. We see people drinking bottled water all the time. And yet we have local water utilities in Colorado winning national awards for the quality of the water. And so do we just have to have a complete attitude shift as water consumers?
Well, it's a very complicated question. I think our water utilities are some of the best in the world in terms of their ability to treat water and get it to high quality. But Valerie's right. There are things that are accumulating in our water, birth control pills, Prozac. So there are contaminants that we still haven't figured out how to treat yet. Now, that shouldn't – I don't think that's the biggest concern. I mean, that's something that we need to figure out. And that's in our system here in Colorado, we have a water quality control group, and then we have water rights and water utilities, and they're somewhat separate. And I think we're going to be the water quality control side of the equation is looking very closely at these issues and working to find solutions. On the water management side, I think everything people can do makes a difference. You know, Jim did mention that 80% of the water is in agriculture. That's one bucket that we need to focus on, how we might move water from agriculture to cities and to the environment. But when it comes to finding solutions in your home, there are lots of things people can do, whether it's buying water smart fixtures, taking out lawn. Every drop adds up. So we can take a new attitude towards being responsible users of water. You can make choices about what you eat. Beef uses a lot more water than vegetables. You don't have to stop eating beef, but you know, you eating more vegetables actually has a lower water footprint. So being a good consumer, thinking about your landscaping makes a big difference. Using xeriscape plants, which are ones that require less water. So we do have to think differently about our water use as individuals. But I think we've, as a society, we still have a long way to go. We think water, we turn on the tap and water comes out. And we need to understand that they come from rivers, they have impacts. We are taking water from one community to another. We have impacts on those communities. So we do have to take responsibility as citizens and make choices that are good water choices.
Well, just as a note to end on before our next break, Taylor, I think that's interesting because so many water users in the Front Range now seeing exactly our relationship to water up close and personal because so much of our water system's compromised, whether we're under a water boil advisory or being told to limit our water consumption. And so people do have to really face our water use. That was Taylor Hawes. She is my guest in the KGNU studio. She's the Nature Conservancy's Colorado River Program Director. She's one of our guests as part of this Connecting the Drops. And we are talking tonight about the Colorado River. We do have some callers from Colorado Springs. We're going to get to them in just a moment. We'll be back in a minute.